Hi, my name is Jeanette from Hinesville, Georgia, and I believe that gentrification is a four-letter word. I think that there should be a balance between revitalizing a neighborhood and keeping the people that make the neighborhood vibrant.
That's from Portland, Oregon, and when we moved here, we had a house for $700 per month. Now those houses, one bedrooms, are going for $1,500. Everywhere we look, little houses are being demolished. My son said, soon there'll be no more little houses.
It's not the same everywhere. I mean, because it changes from neighborhood to neighborhood and block to block.
What we don't talk about, actually, is race. Racism and systemic racism.
It's ignorance. It's about not knowing the benefits that I have because I'm white.
Try and understand this moment. And there are a range of opinions on what's happening.
Well, all this week, we've been talking about gentrification in American cities. WNYC's Rebecca Carroll joins us in just a few minutes because we've heard from a lot of people who've experienced a changing neighborhood or have brought change to a neighborhood themselves. But then there's the question, what makes an ideal, thriving neighborhood? Our friends at KCUR in Kansas City, well, they've been wondering the same thing.
I'm Asha Gartner. If you have a park in your neighborhood, then it'll get kids outside to get some exercise.
Hello, my name is Lucas Kelly McGee. I think a thriving neighborhood should have diversity because diversity can help you. Like, if you want to have a party, like, you could party different ways and learn different things about other people.
My name is Cashley Muldrew. If there's somebody older, you could, like, I always help my elders. You could do that.
My name is Justice Christensen.
What makes the neighborhood thrive is they take care of little problems before it gets big, and they try and keep their community safe, and whenever something is wrong, they don't just stand there and watch or laugh. They will help each other.
Hello, my name is Bishop Malik Williams. And I think a thriving neighborhood has safety.
Hello, my name is Isabella White. What makes a neighborhood safe is that lots of people are friends and family, and if someone got, like, cut themselves with glass, or if someone didn't feel safe in their own house because they had a broken window or something and it wasn't there before, maybe those friends and family can come and help them.
Those are some very wise third graders from Crossroads Academy. That's a public charter school in downtown Kansas City, Missouri, courtesy of KCUR's Sylvia Maria Goss. Earlier, I talked with Rebecca Carroll. She's the producer for special projects on race at WNYC and a reporter for the new podcast, There Goes the Neighborhood. That's a collaboration between our co-producer, WNYC, and The Nation magazine. We've gotten so many comments from listeners like you all across the U.S., both gentrified and the gentrified. And I asked Rebecca the question that came up in Kansas City just a moment ago. What does an ideal neighborhood look like?
So it's hard to describe the ideal neighborhood without sounding like, you know, let's all get in a circle and sing together. But truthfully, I mean, I think it should be a place that is representative of the country. And that means black and brown faces. That means white faces. That means a vast array of folks who are in different types of jobs and careers. And, you know, that is truly properly diverse.
Here's a text we got from right here in New York City. I want to read it for you. It's gentrifying as I text this, and it's very unpleasant. I was part of the creative class wave that stabilized the area, but we didn't pay much either and certainly didn't push anyone out. Now that there is so much development, it's becoming increasingly newcomer-centric and insufferable. I'm thinking of selling and moving. Rebecca Carroll, your reaction to that.
So that is so interesting. I mean, the idea of the creative class, which is a term that was coined by the Toronto economist Richard Florida some years back.
Starving artists moving in.
But it's basically, I mean, the creative class are the kind of the pioneers, the visionaries of gentrification. Artists with cultural savvy who are drawn to areas that have energy and a kind of diversity of color and race and ethnicity and a beat and a, you know, something, a pulse. And so, you know, mostly, I'm not going to say all, but primarily white, who come to these neighborhoods and are drawn to that diversity, but then rebrand it. So creative class are the folks who create the gorgeous packaging of the artisanal chocolate. You know what I mean? These are the folks who turn the neighborhood into a stylized neighborhood as opposed to a properly diverse neighborhood.
Well, does this then mean that gentrification is strictly in the eye of the beholder? The creative class doesn't view themselves as the gentrifier because they're creative, they're down with the vibe of the neighborhood. As soon as somebody follows them, all of a sudden, the soul of the neighborhood is gone.
They're down with the vibe of the neighborhood, but they also know how to monetize that vibe and monetize it in a way that is attractive to people who then are these kind of newcomer-centric and insufferable folks.
So many of our callers, I think, are also sort of struggling with what exactly this is. We got a lot of calls about the difference between gentrification versus revitalization. Listen.
Hi, my name is Danette from Hinesville, Georgia, and I believe that gentrification is a four-letter word. People that have lived in their communities for decades and own the property that they live in, but maybe not the land, are losing things that they've worked so hard to maintain. There should be a balance between revitalizing a neighborhood and keeping the people that make the neighborhood vibrant and beautiful and whole.
I would venture to say that Annette probably agrees with you.
So that's pretty extraordinary. I mean, this echoes almost exactly, you know, what I have said here and in conversation and in making this podcast. Revitalization and urban renewal happens in cities across the country. There are still folks who have been in a home for long enough so that it feels like displacement. It feels like upheaval. That's really all that matters, you know, whether or not this is inevitable or it's bound to happen. There has to be a way to sort of manage and be mindful of people who are having this experience.
At the same time, I keep offering you counterexamples. Of course, we heard from Daniel in Chico, California, who said that gentrification has been good in his neighborhood. He said it's been very positive. Property values have gone up. Crime from drugs and human trafficking is down. I have a very positive take on that.
And I think that that is great. And I think that that obviously serves him. I would feel concerned about, more concerned about the people it does not serve, which is to say the people who were driven out before the revitalization happened, the people who lived there when the drugs were still being sold, when there was still violence, when there was less commerce, when there was less opportunity.
Rebecca Carroll, one of sort of the key parts of this constant debate over gentrification is race and also economics. There are laws of nature when it comes to economics, one of which is people will go where the rent is cheap. That's the way it is. It's like a bird eating a worm. We heard from Sean, and I want to play you his call.
My name is Sean Rosvold. I'm calling from Colorado Springs, Colorado. I lived in Crown Heights, Brooklyn from 2005 until 2011. Moving there, we were some of the few white people in the neighborhood. We got stopped walking down the street, black people asking us what we were doing there. We never considered it a race issue at all. We considered it an economic issue. It was an affordable house. And we moved in.
It was affordable. We moved in. But was Sean sort of blind to the fact that economics and race can sometimes be two sides of the same coin?
Well, totally blind. I mean, he says it himself. We never considered it a race issue at all. So that's how nice that he didn't have to consider it a race issue when the people who lived there, it's always a race issue. It's easy to say it's about economics. It's easy to say it's an affordable place. I can afford it. I'm going to move in. Again, race, though, stands alone in that no matter whether people of color have money or don't have money, they're still black people. Or termed, you know, here as black people who are stopping and questioning what this white guy is doing in their community. He sounded to me like unnerved by that.
Who wouldn't be unnerved by that? If somebody had just bought a house or rented a house and was walking down their block, even if they're not prepared for what they're doing in that neighborhood, who wouldn't be unnerved by being stopped by people who say, what are you doing here? I think that would unnerve any person.
Okay, sure. Fair enough. Somebody who did some research about the neighborhood they're moving into, an historically black neighborhood, and suddenly white people are moving in. There is anxiety around that for all of the historical reasons, race in America, and for, you know, the direction that neighborhoods are changing. So I think, you know, be that as it may, if he was unnerved by that. But I think that the person who wouldn't be unnerved by that is a person who took some time to think about sort of plopping themselves in the space without entering the community.
Well, we hope that this continuing conversation on gentrification and race helps to serve that very purpose. Rebecca Carroll is producer of special projects on race at WNYC. She's a reporter for the new podcast, There Goes the Neighborhood. That's a collaboration between our co-producer, WNYC, and The Nation magazine. Rebecca, thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.